NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by Ford, with 50 new models for 1970. Ford is the going thing. Here is Lou Wood.
British riot troops moved into Londonderry, Northern Ireland, today for the first time in 2 months, after an outburst of fighting between Protestants and Roman Catholics. A report from Kevin O'Kelly in Dublin.
400 British troops were called out in Londonderry today to clear the center of the city when a crowd of some hundreds of Catholic and Protestant teenagers tussled in the city square. This was the first significant violence in the north since last October. It started when civil rights workers picketed the local post office where the government has admitted civil rights mail is censored. The soldiers put up barbed wire to contain the crowd, and before it finally dispersed, there were demonstrations outside the local police station. Nobody was hurt, but there were 3 arrests. There were 2 other public demonstrations today in the north, rippling the surface of its present uneasy calm. At Dungannon and Armagh, civil rights workers had peaceful protests because 2 of their number are in jail. This is Kevin O'Kelly, Dublin, for NBC News.
An Israeli army truck loaded with explosives blew up in the port of Eilat today, killing 17 persons. Another 34 were injured, many of them seriously. One report, as yet unconfirmed, said the truck had been disembarking from a transport ship bringing back captured Egyptian military equipment from the Israeli raid on Shadwan Island. The raid brought Egyptian air attacks on Israeli positions along the Suez Canal today, and Israeli planes flew missions over Jordan. A report on Washington doings and more news after this from Ford.
This is the Maverick couple. They drive a Maverick.
Didn't you say when we bought the car last year that Ford would raise the price this year?
I recall that.
That billboard we just passed said Maverick 1995. That's what we paid.
The sign said Maverick 1970, a date, not a price.
It also said 1995 is Ford's suggested retail price. Dealer preparation charges, if any, transportation charges, state and local taxes vary and are not included, nor are special equipment required by state laws. Leonard, don't turn around. We're late. You know I read faster than you do.
You may read faster, but I retain more. Oh, there's the billboard. You see, it says Maverick...
I can't hear you, darling.
It says Maverick still 1995. Ford suggested retail price and center transportation charges are included in the state laws.
That's what I said.
Now, you said Maverick 1995. You left out the word still.
I stand corrected.
Will you sit down?
Ford Maverick, the simple machine. 1995. Still.
Once again, Lou Wood.
President Nixon has returned to the White House after an overnight stay at Camp David in nearby Maryland. Later today, Mr. and Mrs. Nixon will travel to Philadelphia on a special high-speed Penn Central Metroliner. They will attend a gala concert of the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra tonight, marking its 70th anniversary and the 113th anniversary of the Philadelphia Academy of Music. A presidential veto of the Health and Education Appropriations Bill appears more certain than ever. White House News Secretary Ronald Ziegler said today President Nixon has decided to postpone a news conference scheduled for Monday until later in the week. A final House vote on the nearly $20 billion measure is set for Monday, and it seems clear Mr. Nixon had originally scheduled the news conference to explain his first major veto. Now he'll wait for congressional action to be completed. The Senate held a rare Saturday session, and leaders of both parties reported progress on a bill to reduce penalties for using or selling drugs, from marijuana to heroin. The measure also will crack down on drug trafficking by crime syndicates through stiffer penalties for pushers found to be professional criminals. The Democratic and Republican leaders said they expected the bill to pass the Senate on Monday. More in a moment.
Let's lay it on the line. Your Ford dealer's having a white sale, and right now you can get a car with a lot of the special equipment you want at a special low package price. One featured white sale car is Torino, a special edition of your Ford dealer's lowest priced hardtop. I said hardtop. Complete with carpeting, white walls, wheel covers, and dual racing mirrors. With special savings on a vinyl roof if you want it, and a big choice of other options. Fact. Torino. White sale priced for a limited time only. At your Ford dealers now.
Enemy rockets have smashed into an area near Da Nang, South Vietnam's second largest city. Details are still sketchy as to damage or casualties, but the region is where Allied intelligence reports indicate that the communists may mount a major offensive. A federal mediator reported some progress today in talks to end the 13-week-old General Electric strike. J. Curtis Counts said in New York the issues are narrowing between GE and the unions, the AFL-CIO International Union of Electrical Workers, and the Independent United Electrical Workers. 10 other unions are also involved. Once again, the hour's top story, 400 British riot troops moved into Londonderry, Northern Ireland today for the first time since last October, after an outburst of fighting between Protestant and Roman Catholic teenagers. Lou Wood, NBC News, reporting.
Listen again on the hour when Ford, with 50 new models for 1970, brings you NBC Monitor News.
This is Mike Moss with a special report from WNBC News. There are no Penn Central trains running from Croton on the Hudson Division into Grand Central Terminal. A spokesman for the Penn Central tells WNBC News that there are no trains because of labor problems on the Hudson Division in the Harmon Yards. The spokesman says that the situation is caused by the Railroad's Engineering Division Union, and he gives us these details.
We got trouble up there, labor problems with the engineers. They don't. We got the chairman of the engineer union up there, and he's condemning all our equipment. And what's happening is nothing's coming out there. We should have a train out of Harmon shortly, though. But as far as Croton there, it's pretty tied up there right now. And it hasn't been no service for a while. As far as the Hudson Division, you know, like trains out of Croton or Harmon, see.
The labor problems on the Penn Central's Hudson Division began about 2 hours ago. Affected is all service to New York City from Ossining, Scarborough, Tarrytown, Dobbs Ferry, along with Croton and Harmon, and all local stops on the Hudson Division in the Bronx. The labor problems on the Hudson Division of the Penn Central have not affected service on the Harlem or New Haven divisions, the Empire service, or westbound service from Grand Central to stops on the Hudson Division. Once again, there are no Penn Central trains running from Croton on the Hudson Division into Grand Central Terminal because of a labor problem with the Engineers Union on the Hudson Division. It has not affected service on other Penn Central divisions. The weather, mostly sunny and cold this afternoon with a high in the mid to upper 20s. Clear and cold tonight, low 15 to 20, mostly sunny but not as cold tomorrow with a high in the mid to upper 30s. Precipitation probability near zero through tonight, 10% tomorrow. Winds are northwest at 6. The humidity is 42%, and it's 26 degrees and sunny in New York. This is Mike Moss, and this has been a special report from WNBC News. Now back to NBC's Monitor.
Good looking. Henry Morgan on January 24th. Gee, I didn't think he'd live this long. This weekend, we're following the Bing Crosby Pro-Am golf tournament at Pebble Beach, California. We'll tune in on that later this half hour. I really don't feel too good about any of them. Anybody who's out in the partly cloudy on the green while the rest of us are mushing through the slush doesn't deserve to break 100. Here's R.B. Graves. Always something there to remind me.
I walk along the city streets. You used to walk along with me. Every step I take recalls how much in love we used to be. Oh, how can I forget you? Oh, there is always something that you remind me. Always something that you remind me. I was born to love you. You'll always be a part of me. Ooh. When shadows fall, I still recall the cafe where we would dance at night. And I can't help recalling how it felt to kiss and hold you tight. Oh, how can I forget you, baby? Well, there is always something that you remind me. Always something that you remind me. I was born to love you.
always be a part of me. We used to share, then go back to the places where we used to go, and I'll be there. Oh, how can I forget you, baby, 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 baby? There's always something that you remind me, always something that you remind me.
Meyerson faces the future. Your future. Your next Christmas, in fact, and how you're going to save for it. Here's New York City's Commissioner of Consumer Affairs, Mrs. Grant.
If you had $4 billion in the bank, that's 4 billion, mind you, a 4 followed by 9 zeros, how much interest would you expect the bank to pay you? Well, if you're one of the 20 million Americans who put that huge amount into special Christmas club accounts every year, you know what you get? Nothing. One of those 20 million, a young lady with a modest job, wrote to our office this week. Last year, she joined a Christmas club, arranging to pay $10 each week, which would give her $500. But about the end of September, after she'd already paid in $360, she became ill and couldn't continue the payments. On December 15th, she went to the bank to withdraw her $360, plus interest, she thought. But the bank not only did not pay her any interest, it added insult by penalizing her $5 for not keeping up her payments. Each year, $4 billion is deposited with almost 7,000 Christmas clubs, an amount that would earn about $200 million at present interest rates on regular accounts. But each year, the Christmas club depositors receive nothing for the money except storage space and a gaily colored account book. Are the banks doing something wrong? Well, no, not legally. It's the depositor who's at fault in his role as an aware consumer whose responsibility is to get full value for every dollar he spends or saves. What possible reason can he have for choosing a Christmas club? Well, some choose it through ignorance. The banks do not exactly broadcast the fact that their Christmas clubs are no-interest accounts. It's buried in the small print of the contract. Others who are aware of the conditions join because they feel they need the discipline of enforced saving. I think you'll agree it's a high price to pay for it. But whatever the reason, they're keeping alive a situation in which they voluntarily give away $200 million a year. Before you invest in a Christmas vacation or any other savings club, make sure you know what you're getting into. Find out if it pays any interest. There are a few which do. And find out also if you'll be penalized if you miss a payment. Christmas clubs may have a role to play if they play fair with the consumer. We can make that happen. First, by writing to the Federal Reserve Board to insist that the banks, under the Truth in Lending Law, be forced to publicize the no-interest and penalty conditions instead of hiding them in the small print of the contract. Then we can write to the Senate Banking Committee to insist on a change in the law which now permits Christmas and other savings clubs to avoid the payment of a standard rate of interest. It's a change that would be in the best interest of all of us. This is Bess Meyerson Grant speaking for the consumer on Monitor.
See that? A penny saved isn't necessarily a penny earned. It isn't even $4 billion plus interest. I didn't know there was that much saving for Christmas. I thought everybody charged everything. Here's little old Claudine Longer with a new one, Little Man.
Hey, little man, baby, make up your mind. Come into my world and leave your world behind. La 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 la.
Imagine she does all that on only one lung. At 17 past the hour, you're on the monitor beacon.
Today, you can give the gift of enduring health to millions of needy people in Asia, Africa, and Latin America through Medi-Co. What is Medi-Co? It's your gift to that half of the world's population which lives and dies without ever seeing a doctor. It's your gift to many millions who want to be well enough to help themselves. By supporting Medi-Co, a service of care, you help to demonstrate compassion and concern for all mankind. Through Medi-Co, you help to equip hospitals, give medical supplies, and send doctors, nurses, and technologists to train local medical personnel for the benefit of their country's future. Each day, many thousands of people die for lack of medical care. You can help by putting healing hands to work among the family of man. If you are a doctor, nurse, or medical technician, volunteer your skills. But everyone can help by sending dollars to Medi-Co, a service of care, New York 10016.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
The Letterman on Monitor, For Your Love.
For Your Love.
Acid, bubbles, too much work, tension, food. Almost anything can cause stomach upset, acid indigestion.
Will somebody turn off the bubble machine?
Simple antacids can't, but Digel can. Digel has the extra action of a unique ingredient, simethicone, to relieve the pressure caused by gas, bubbles, trapped in your digestive system. Next time your stomach needs help.
Will somebody turn off the bubble machine?
Digel can. It takes the acid and the gas out of acid indigestion. When you eat too well, demand Digel, D-I-G-E-L, tablets or liquid. It really works.
Rub it on, rub it in.
Musterol rubs the pain away.
Rub it on, rub it in.
Musterol, with five medications, heats away muscle pain and head cold stuffiness.
Rub it on, rub it in.
Musterol rubs the pain away. regular extra strength or child mild.
Mark Lindsay and Arizona.
She must belong to San Francisco. She must have lost her way. Posting a poster of Pancho and Cisco one California day. She says she believes in a Robin Hood and Brotherhood and colors of green and gray. And all you can do is laugh at her. Doesn't anybody know how to pray? Acting like a teeny bopper runaway child. And scrape off the paint from the face of a little town saint.
Because now we have Monitor Sports, where the subject is golf and celebrities. We pause 6 seconds and then switch to the Bing Crosby Pro-Am Golf Tournament at Pebble Beach, California.
This is Frank Dill. Only 20% of the field has completed play so far in this third round. And just moments ago, Bert Yancey canned a 70-foot putt for a birdie on the ninth hole, giving him a 36 going out, and he's still our leader at 7-under. However, Bob Golby is now 6-under, having completed play with a 71 here at Pebble Beach today, and Bobby Nichols fired a sizzling 32 on the front nine here at Pebble to move into contention at 4-under. Just a while ago, I talked to one of the celebrities in the field, the former left-hander of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Sandy Koufax. Sandy, you're one of the early finishers today, so you've played Pebble. Is it playing tough, easy, medium, what?
Well, it's probably playing as easy as it'll ever play. There's not very much wind out there, but everything plays tough when you hit it as bad as I have.
Listen, they don't hit the ball that badly, do you?
Well, I have the last 3 days up here.
Did you hit any on the rocks or on the beach?
Well, you didn't see me play the 18th hole, did you?
No, I didn't.
That's right.
Sandy, you must enjoy, though, a test of golf with the professionals and the pressure on for about 3 days. Isn't it kind of a nice change for an amateur golfer? Good experience?
Hey, it's good experience if you'd like to become a professional. I don't know. It's a lot of fun. I play with Chuck Courtney, and I just wish I could play better, you know, or had played better to try and help your professional. I didn't have a good week.
when the winds blew yesterday, where were you?
We were probably in the best place we could have been at Spyglass, but it got a little windy out there also.
How has your partner, Chuck Courtney, been playing?
Well, Chuck's played very well. He had a fine round today, I believe, of either 69 or 70.
Sandy, thank you.
My pleasure.
Spyglass Hill may have been the place to be yesterday, but today it's playing a lot tougher. Don Massengale, a former Crosby champ, is playing over there today. He started the day 4-under and has lost 3 shots to par through 14 holes. That's at Spyglass Hill. Repeating our leader, Bert Yancey, is 7-under par through 9 holes today. Bob Golby is 6-under, having completed his third round of play with a 71. Now, after a 6-second pause, we'll switch to Henry Morgan. This is Frank Dill for Monitor Sports.
Thank you, Frank Gill. You say my name very nice. Another progress report on the Bing Crosby Pan-Am. Pro-Am. Hey. Gee. Later today on Monitor, the... Would you care to hear any of this again? Green sound and Georgie. In north central Kansas, you're listening to station KLSI. Wherever you are, stay with us. There's more Monitor.
Have you been left with your pancake on the ceiling overnight? If you have, don't fear. Care is here. The Galloping Gourmet. Monitor every weekend. Ooh, it's fun.
Saturday, Morgan here. Joe Garagiola has some advice for hockey players in this half hour, and I have some advice for Joe. Don't fool around with hockey players. They're rough. Here's Bobby Sherman. La, la, la.
La, la, la. La, 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 la. My dreams would all come true if I had you. I'm just a lonely boy in a great big lonely world. Someone like you could make my dreams come true. And all the mountains I could climb if you just put your hand in mine. There ain't nothing in this world I couldn't do. La la la, la la la. There ain't nothing in this world I couldn't do. La la la, la la la. My dreams would all come true if I had you. Rainy days, sunny in my mind. You make the world seem like a friend to me. Yeah, there ain't nothing I couldn't do if you were there to see me through. And I love you and knew that you loved me. Thank you.
Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
There was a sports story this week that failed to get the attention it deserved. It came from St. Louis, where the National Hockey League Players Association sat down with the owners to discuss their mutual problems. It was announced that during that meeting, the players had asked that mandatory wearing of helmets be given serious consideration by the owners. Well, up until now, we've heard mostly from players who were opposed to wearing helmets, or at least said they were opposed to it. The fact is that for hockey players not to wear helmets just doesn't make sense. Let's look at the advantage of the helmet. In the first place, hockey can become a very emotional game, and every player carries a stick. In the hands of some players, that stick is a graceful extension of the player's skill. In the hands of others, it can be, and often is, a weapon. During the preseason exhibition schedule, players Ted Green and Wayne Mackey got into a rhubarb, and pretty soon the sticks went into action. Now, several months and several brain operations later, Green's future as a player is still questionable. Players have said that helmets would be dangerous, especially when the puck is being battled for in a corner. The claim is that helmets would interfere with hearing, and a player wants to be able to hear an opponent who's coming at him. I think there are two answers to that. One, helmets can be developed, I'm sure, I'm positive, that wouldn't bother a player's hearing. Two, rinks are surrounded by hard plexiglass, and having your head banged into that has to be dangerous, too. Hockey is a game where players often fall. If they fall forward, it probably won't be too serious. But they can fall backwards, too. That happened to Minnesota's Bill Masterton. His head smacked against the hard ice, and as a result, Bill Masterton died. It is logical to assume that a helmet could have saved his life. It's the player's ego, rather than his intelligence, that makes him say, I don't need a helmet. I can take care of myself. Baseball players used to say the same thing. Well, today, all baseball players wear helmets when they go up to home plate. And this happened because it was ordered, rather than requested. Making the hockey helmet mandatory will face some problems, even though it shouldn't. Later today on Monitor, I'll be back to discuss those problems and even offer a suggestion or two. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Just one thing, Joe. When you offer a hockey player a suggestion, say please.
See you.
and the Supremes and someday we'll be together right here on the Monitor Beacon.
Hey, beautiful. Climb aboard my tricycle and let me take you away from all of this.
I'm sorry. I don't go out with strangers.
But I'll show you romance and adventure. I'll take you to a Wetson's hamburger restaurant.
You wouldn't sweet talk me, would you?
Of course not. We'll have delicious Wetson's hamburgers and French fries and creamy Wetson's thick shakes.
Darling, we were meant for each other.
You and me, beautiful?
No, me and Wetson.
You love Wetson's taste of happiness on a bun.
In West Haven, Connecticut, on Orange Avenue across from New Haven College. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, on Boston Avenue, corner of Pembroke Street.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
You're traveling through the weekend world with Monitor. And God only knows. Graham Kerr, the galloping gourmet, to perform one of his incredible sleight-of-tongue tricks.
I think, really, what I would like to describe as a sort of perennial problem with most people who'd like to make their own stock. And then this doesn't happen too often nowadays because, let's face it, the canned bouillon which we can buy is very good and serves the purpose brilliantly. But sometimes people like to do things themselves. I do, I know. And the result of which is that you make stock and you clarify it and it's all ready and it's beautiful. It's like a lovely consommé. But this isn't automatically all this work you have to go to. How can you save that stock? You just put it into a bowl, let it jelly, leave it in the fridge, and then it grows a mold on the top and you send it off to the penicillin people. Now, it really is quite simple to float that into a flexible plastic ice cube tray and freeze it. And then all you do is click out your stock. Whenever you want a piece of stock, just click it out. It's great in whiskey. It's Graham Kerr for NBC Monitor.
Yes, it's not bad in vodka. And it's called a bullhorn because it makes you loud. The Galloper is heard weekdays on NBC Radio. Here's a new one by Bobby Vinton, Elusive Dreams.
You followed me to Texas. You followed me to Utah. We didn't find it there, so we moved on. You followed me to Alabama. Things look good in Birmingham. We didn't find it there, so we moved on.
Supreme Court nominee is in the news again. The Haynsworth nomination, as you remember, was defeated, and now the president has named Judge G. Harold Carswell to fill the vacancy on the court. But because of a speech supporting a policy of white supremacy in 1948, it looks as though Judge Carswell's nomination may become an issue too. Well, what is the history of the men of this august body? Leon Friedman is one of the editors and contributors to a book called The Justices of the Supreme Court. He explained to reporter Betty Grobley why they wrote the book.
We decided that we would go back and see who sat on that institution, who were the 97 justices from the very beginning who have shaped it and made it what it is. And so we discovered that half the justices, perhaps even more than half the justices, have never been the subject of even a scholarly article, so that they really are lost to history, lost to America.
Have they all been attorneys?
They've all been lawyers.
And how many did we start with?
We started with six. President Washington appointed six separate people from six separate sections of the country, largely to give the different areas, different states, some stake in the new federal government.
Have they all been political appointments?
They've all been political. I mean, occasionally you'll get a top-flight lawyer or a top-flight judge whose accomplishments are so universally recognized, I think Benjamin Cardozo was one of them, that even though he had no political activity of any kind, still the president did appoint him.
We think of it as being a liberal, forward-looking court. Is this always been so?
No. If you go back from John Marshall's time right up to Earl Warren, there's scarcely a year, scarcely a time in which the court didn't drag everyone behind, in which they didn't try to stop the executive department or the legislature from implementing a reform. I mean, the court was the greatest bulwark against labor reform for a period of 60 years. Every time labor came before it and tried to justify some tactic it took, the Supreme Court almost universally ruled against it. And the Supreme Court ruled against the income tax in 1894. In the Dred Scott case, it ruled that Negroes could never be citizens of the United States. And of course, in the early New Deal days, all the great New Deal reforms were thrown out by the Supreme Court. And during all this period, the liberals were always attacking the court as a conservative institution which was trying to thwart the will of the people. And it's a very recent phenomenon. It's only when Earl Warren came to the court, once he became the Chief Justice, things began to turn. Of course, he needed the votes of the great justices such as William Douglas and Hugo Black and William Brennan, and then, of course, Arthur Goldberg and Abe Fortas also joined the liberal.
Leon, why have there never been any women on the Supreme Court?
Well, I suppose women, there have been very few women lawyers. There have been a limited number of them, and only recently have women been appointed even to be judges of the lower federal courts or on the state courts. And there are some excellent judges sitting on the courts right now, and I don't think it'll be too far off in the future before a woman will be appointed to the Supreme Court.
We've been talking to Leon Friedman. He's an attorney. He's an editor and one of the contributors to The Justices of the United States Supreme Court, 1789-1969, Their Lives and Major Opinions. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
You know, maybe one of the problems with the court is its name, Supreme. Must be difficult for a man to live up to that. Maybe we should call it the Government Court, or the Washington Nine. Might make it easier to find nominees for it.
Thank you.
Aldrich and Aquarius. Henry the M. back after the news.